this episode of The Commercial Break.
Everyone has a right to exist and have right to food, water, and shelter, right. You know? There's people that actually believe that.
That's scary.
And for me, like, I always knew I was make it. I always knew I was, like, you asked me this question before. Did you really imagine for yourself? And I do sometimes want to be like, yeah, I never did, but I saw it. No, I did. I did. Yeah. And I'm grateful that I did. I'm grateful that I felt that in my gut, and I followed my gut, which is a big gut. But it has, you know, and it was right. That's what matters most.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
2:30 in the morning!
Oh, yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green, and welcome to a TCB infomercial. Wednesday, that's right, our new schedule is Wednesday and Fridays. You can also catch us recording the episodes live on Tuesdays and Thursdays. That'll start after January 1st as Chrissy and I are out of town on our holiday break. Well-deserved, I think. You can tell us. TCB Infomercial Wednesday with Mr. Mo Amir. It is not often or ever when I can say that we are entertaining a Peabody Award-winning comedian and artist, director, actor, writer, but we are today, Mo Amir. He has made quite the splash into Hollywood over the last couple of years. If you have watched his award-winning television show, Mo, then you will know that he is not only creative, he is politically active, he is outspoken, he is motivated, he is kind, he is gentle, he is all those things. And this is one of the conversations that I enjoyed most in 2025. I'm happy to present this episode to you. He's also been in Crashing. He has Netflix specials, Mo Amir, The Vagabond. He was at Raimi on, I think it was on Hulu. Yes, Hulu. All those things you can check out. I've put a couple of the links in the show notes so that you can look for yourself. But I imagine if you see a picture of him, then you will instantaneously recognize him. Mo was everywhere. It was everywhere for a couple of years there, and super happy to have him with us today. Chrissy was here for the recording of the episode, but like we've been doing the last couple of weeks, I'm doing the intro and I'm doing the outro because more sickness is running around. No, actually, because Chrissy and I are both out of town and it just worked out that way. So just a reminder, putting a pin on it, Wednesdays and Fridays are the new schedule for The Commercial Break for the foreseeable future. So we're running a TCB infomercial today, and then we will catch you live Tuesdays and Thursdays on YouTube, youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. Follow us at The Commercial Break on Instagram so you can get all of the details, all the deets, as the kids would say. And so let's take a short break. And as soon as we get back on this telepodcasting machine here in the studio, Chrissy and I will be talking to Mr. Mo Amir. And I'll talk to you on the flip side.
Hey, it's Rachel, your new voice of God here on TCB. And just like you, I'm wondering just how much longer this podcast can continue. Let's all rejoice that another episode has made it to your ears, and I'll rejoice that my check is in the mail. Speaking of mail, get your free TCB sticker in the mail by going to tcbpodcast.com and visiting the Contact Us page. You can also find the entire Commercial Break library, audio and video, just in case you want to look at Chrissy, at tcbpodcast.com. Want your voice to be on an episode of the show? Leave us a message at 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Tell us how much you love us, and we'll be sure to let the world know on a future episode. Or you could make fun of us. That'd be fine, too. We might not air that, but maybe. Oh, and if you're shy, that's okay. Just send a text. We'll respond. Now I'm going to go check the mailbox for payment while you check out our sponsors, and then we'll return to this episode of The Commercial Break.
And Mo is here with us now. Mo, I can safely say that I think you're the first Peabody Award winner to show up to the commercial break. That's incredible. Well, there's a first for everything. And your agent has led you astray. But tell... you have...
I told them I needed a break, and they were like, we got something perfect for you. I was like, what?
We often say on this show that you show up for one of two reasons. Mm. You're on your way up or on your way down. I have a feeling you're on your way up.
Oh, boy. It's a rough room.
Congratulations on all the success over the last couple of years. We Chrissy and I were just talking about the television show, which did win a Peabody Award. And I mean, could you have ever imagined this? Like,
yeah, from Houston.
Or did you imagine? Like, were you? Yeah. Is this where you wanted? Yeah. Is this where you wanted to go?
Yes. Yes, yeah. I did. Yes. That's no, awesome. I did. You know, I'm a dreamer. You know, I do. I did have like a vision for myself at a very early age of what I wanted to do with my life and what kind of stories I wanted to tell. And it's never, you know, you don't ever expect anything, you know? So it's extremely flattering, rewarding, and it feels energizing to get, of course, a Peabody or a Gotham or, you know, to be, honored in the AFI, for instance, which I just didn't know how extraordinarily special that is. So,
I didn't know that.
So you're like there in that room, and it's like your show is selected from 600. There's like 10 that they select from 600, and then like next to you, the 10 films of the year, and it's everywhere all at once, and it's Spielberg and James Cameron. You're like, what am I doing?
But you're right.
It's crazy.
Yeah, you do pinch yourself in that situation. You're like, oh, cool. And then you get a letter from Spielberg saying like how much he loves the show. You're like,
oh, my God.
You got a letter from
Spielberg?
Spielberg?
You quit.
Yeah. How can I do that? How can I do better than this?
I'm out.
I've done it.
Mic drop mode.
Yeah. No, it's cool. It's definitely, it's affirming, but it's, you know, this business sucks, man, because once you do that, you feel good for like 2 seconds and you're like, what's next? What am I going to do next? And what am I going to tell? And then season two was a big, heavy, heavy lift for me. And just emotionally, not creatively or anything like that. I feel like I'm built for making film and television. So it wasn't necessarily like, oh, that it was emotionally very, very difficult and heavy. And I was just thrilled that I was able to fulfill basically everything I wanted to do with season two and then taking that into the special of Wild World.
Yeah.
I was just very, very happy about that. But then you're like so exhausted emotionally and mentally. You're like, okay.
Maybe I
should go raise my son for a bit.
I think that people who are creative for a living, I do think that there are these deep breaths that need to be taken. Like there's these moments
you have to recharge.
You have to recharge and reflect and lean into the things that maybe you just drove on by because things were moving so fast. And I can't imagine how it must feel. I can imagine it's hard to sit in that room like Steven Spielberg and all these people as you were just sharing and then go like really be able to suck that all in that moment. It probably takes a moment of space when you can go, holy shit, this just all happened to me. And then you have to recharge your batteries and go do it again. You have to go do the next thing. And that's
exactly,
that's really hard. I think, I don't know who said this. Someone said this on our show. Another comedian said this on our show that if you come up with one or two good hours, great hours of material in your life, then you'll, it used to be that you would be considered one of the greats.
That's
but
true.
Now, right? It's like you have to come up with a great hour or two every 2 years or you're not on top of the game. And so, you know, I think you're a little bit different in the sense that you're also speaking about stuff that is very close to your heart and is very serious.
Personal.
So it's emotionally taxing. It's personal to you. How are you feeling now? How is the current climate feeling to you right now?
Well, you touched upon a few things. First of all, like regarding the stand-up and how many hours you come up with and this and that, I think every person is different. You know, it just depends on what you're trying to say, what you do, or you just, is there any meaning behind your work? And I think that's something that I've always wanted. It's like, what is the legacy you leave behind and what kind of stories are you telling and who's going to be able to like carry that after you? You know, that's something that I think about pretty frequently. And also, has this been done before? Has any of this been done before? Have I heard anything like this before? That's what really gets me excited. Mm-hmm. And yes, taking a break and taking a breath and all that is good. But also, it's a double-edged sword for me. It's like I need to get the stuff out too, or else I feel restless.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, understanding how to do that. I don't even know how to like vacation. I really don't. Like, my wife is the one that really just taught me how to do that. I don't even know how to do that. It was really weird, like, just to sit around and just do what? What are we doing? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it just felt odd space for me. So you try to read, you try to, you know, just process as much as you can and be present as much as you can in those moments. But really, that's what it's about for me. It's like, what kind of stories am I telling? Have I seen anything like this before? Is it going to be interesting enough for me to like to keep my attention, to be honest? And that's what gets me going. And stand up is one thing. And, you know, I'll go up on stage and I'll riff for hours, not just doing like, you know, be inspired by the audience, but that's how I write. Everything is improvised. So when you think of like constructing a particular hour that's encapsulating something, what is it, whatever it is. And for me with Wild World is kind of buttoning up what I did with season two of Mo and just bringing that chapter to a close so I can move on and do the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it was for me. And I feel like I captured the time in Wild World. Mm-hmm. And that's my son letting me know that I have not done that. He's calling me out right now.
Well, welcome to the show, my little buddy.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
No, it's fine. Don't be sorry.
Okay, as long as you're okay with it, I'm fine with
it. We have a dog that barks every episode.
Whenever you get around to listening to an episode of The Commercial Break, you'll hear kids, dogs, lawnmowers,
great
vacuums. Yeah,
I feel great. No vacuums. Vacuums got to be the worst. But no. Genuinely, like with Wild World, I really wanted to capture the time. And that's why, like, the closer even of the special is all about time, how we make use of our time. It's kind of like this poem, this reflection, this bit, sometimes funny, sometimes mostly reflective. And I wrote that like the day before I filmed the special.
Wow.
And it was like 4 pages long, and I was just panicking, but I was also really inspired, and I had to do it. It's just like something that I had to do. And you talk about like, oh, you got to take a year, 2 years to develop material. That's true. But sometimes you got to have the guts to follow your instincts and to understand like, oh, you got to follow your inspiration and the things that you write, you got to believe in, and then you push forward and you put yourself and everybody else around you in a slight panic attack. But when you're done, it's tremendous, you know, and that's how I feel about it.
Do you find those moments of inspiration are some of your best? Like, I think,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They are, because, you know, I wonder how many people actually have those moments and they get too scared or their fear stops them from doing it.
I think most.
Yeah. And I think the with season two of making my show, I can't tell you how many times I rewrote stuff on set that took it from like a B+ to an A+. There's so many moments that just elevated things or change a setup, which is, you know, not easy to do when you're under that kind of stress of finishing at a certain time. And, you know, there's all these implications if you don't execute, you know, especially on a film set.
Yeah.
TV set, you know, it just causes a tremendous domino effect. So you have to really be on top of it and really understand like what story you're trying to tell and really believe in those instincts and know how to execute. And I find myself, I'm really great at it. Like, this is the thing I work best with my back under pressure.
A lot of people get bored.
I get bored if there's no, I'm like, ah, whatever, we'll do it later.
Yeah. I feel that sense of urgency too, is that when there's a fire under my ass, there's motivation there. And I find what I call, you know, moments of creativity, I think are just moments of God, right? It's just like, you're shutting off, something's allowing you to just like channel whatever's coming through. And I don't find those in moments of like, you know, just sitting around thinking about it. I find it when it happens in the moment, when the pressure's on, there he or she comes, right?
Well, I think it's a combo. I think it's a combination of all those things. I think it's all those hours you spent before that moment, you know, like weeks and weeks and months and maybe years of thinking about something, and then you write it out and then you go film it. And then you see it and you go, wait, wait, wait. I got it now.
Yeah.
So you can't discount all that effort that happened before. It's really like inspired in the moment because you've spent so much time nurturing it.
Yeah.
So that's how it, to me, that's how it works for me, at least, like where I spend all this time and then in the moment you're like, wait, this is wrong. It's not completely wrong, but if you tweak this, you'll get to something really special. And you do, most of the time you do. And if it sucks, you got to be honest with yourself and tell your ego to shut up. And you're like, this sucks. You got to cut this.
That's true. I love hearing you describe your own creative process. Do you have people around you that you trust? Or does this come from Mo? Like, are you the ultimate arbiter of what's coming out of your brain? Or are there people around you, like your wife or a friend or a producer, whoever, that goes, hey, Mo, not this, that?
I'm the pretty much the first guy that'll say that, to be honest.
Okay.
And then I'll have people that I'll show it to, and I could tell right away, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could tell if this is good or not, because I'm a big believer in, like, necessarily notes, but first reactions, right?
Yes.
And then I'll see if I actually communicated what I wanted in a particular scene or in a stand-up bit or whatever. You'll see it right away, and then you'll be like, oh, I know how to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do my job fully here. Let me fix that. And then you'll tweak it and then you'll get what you want out of it. That's usually how I operate. Like with the series and everything, like I'm just, me and my editors, we're just from episode to episode, we just flip, we swap back and forth. And, you know, every second is accounted for, everything. Even when we were scoring the show, I'd go and score the show with the band and sit together and like, this didn't sound right, and switch this, do that, go faster here, you know. And I don't know anything about scoring a show, but I can feel it and I can know it, and you see it,
unbelievable,
and just make adjustments. So there's every part of it, like I was meticulously involved with. There's not a second that's not accounted for. And maybe like the opening of season two, I spent like 100 hours on, maybe more.
Jeez.
It's like the first minute.
The first minute.
Yeah. Even for the special, the opening shadow, I spent like 70 hours on, something like that. Just walking through Washington, D.C. of my shadow.
You love so this irritating. Process, huh?
No, I don't. It sucks.
Oh, you don't?
Don't.
But not this part.
I mean, not
no,
that
not this part. But I'm saying the whole thing. Like not the like, you know, every
the
single minute
process.
Of, you know, being in with the band. You love.
Yeah, the band stuff was awesome. Yeah, the band stuff is awesome. Music is everything. It could turn you off also right away if it doesn't work well. I mean, whoever's scoring the show, they have to know what your intention is with, you know, how you're directing things, or how you put it together, and how you edit it. And they don't know.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, you gotta like help them out to do their job.
Yeah,
so you know, and I enjoyed that aspect immensely. But you know, just spending hours and hours in a dark room, you know,
editing every
going over a particular show. Not the edit, but like if you're particularly focusing on a particular montage or thing, you just, you know, it just sucks. It's not fun.
Yeah.
At some point, you want to just pull your ears off your face, you know, like your head, you know, it's like not fun. You pull your eyelashes out. It's not good. No. It's painful. It's very painful.
Oh, you have a talent for it though. I mean, there's what comes out of it.
So it still sucks. It still hurts. No. But like when you put it together and everything is there, it's extremely rewarding, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And you know, that's why I really enjoyed the premiere of season two, like, you know, people seeing it with like, you know, 300 people in a theater.
Did you go do that?
That was cool.
You said watch it with 300 people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It was so cool to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be like when you do a podcast, and you know this too, because you've been a part of one, like when you do a podcast, you're talking into a microphone, it goes into the void, right? You never see anybody's reaction. Maybe somebody writes or calls or texts or whatever.
Sure.
But it goes into a void. And I think what would feel gratifying to me is to see people react to the work that you put out
in
real time.
In live
time. In real time. That to me would be like the ultimate, you know, just.
That's why stand-up is so
rewarding,
but also like you get your response right away. They'll tell you if it sucks or it doesn't immediately, or if it's interesting, though, you could tell they're with you. You know what I mean? Like what you're talking about, they're still engaged.
There's like an energy in the room. You're playing with the energy, right? Yeah, you're pushing
exactly.
back and forth.
Exactly. You could tell. As long as you keep them interested, that's all that really matters. You always find the joke and you find the thing. But if you're just wandering around, then they'll start wandering. If you don't have like, if you don't have them captivated, then they'll just like stop listening.
Do you, I'm interested to know, do those moments still happen to you often? Because if you're, because you mentioned that a lot of what you do is improvised, right? And you're doing it on the fly, or you're finding inspiration moments before, a day before, or whatever. Do you find that there are moments when you throw something out there, the audience doesn't react, and you're feeling some, like, I don't know, kind of
sweet. I don't feel anything inside. It's just like, we know, whenever you're starting at zero, like I am after the special release, you're just, yeah. I like to get back in the swing of things. And the way I do that is just being as natural as possible, which means that there's nothing prepared. I'm going up on stage. I'm going to be in the moment. The audience will inspire something or not, and then I'll figure it out, you know?
Wow.
And then you'll end up like on stage. Like in the last 3 days, I did like, not this, this past week, I did like 6 hours of stand-up in 3 days. We were just on stage for 2 hours, 2.5, 2:20, you know?
Wow. Where do you do that?
We don't even know. I was doing them in Houston in my hometown with this small room called The Box inside The Secret Group. It's like a music, like rock venue. It's fun. It's really, really fun. So you just do these pop-ups in Houston, and I just like doing it. It's just so much fun, and it's like the pure stand-up of it all. Like, I really, really enjoy it. But that's how I'll do it. And then you'll find stuff, and you'll build stuff from there, and then, you know, you'll just keep doing that over and over again. And somebody will tell you or be like, oh, the thing you did. I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good one. I should work on that.
Remind me of what I said.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I film everything. So that's the process, though. Everything is completely just freestyle and, you know, and just very natural and organic and in the moment. And then you'll run into stuff that you wouldn't think about. And sometimes I'll do this where I'm like, oh, before the show even starts, this is just like in the building stage. I'd be like, hey, write down like a subject and it'll put it in a bucket for me and I'll have it on the side. And after like an hour, hour and a half of being on stage, I'm like, all right, let's see what's in the bucket. And I'll reach in the bucket and there'll be a topic and people that you could just tell what's, it's almost like having a focus group.
Yeah.
And you could see what's on people's minds.
Yeah.
And some of it's silly, some of it is topical, some of it's political. It just depends. Everyone's different. Some of it is just outright silly and gross, you know, like people are gross sometimes, which is fun. You know, it's also fun.
Yeah.
But it's a nice mix up. But that's, I think that spontaneity is very important in stand up, at least for me, just to keep that like organic, natural feel to it.
And you're asking the audience to get involved. You're reacting to it instantaneously. That takes an immense amount of, I think, presence and talent. Like, it's, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. There are so many stand-up comics, and we've talked to so many of them. And you know that, and that's, and it's okay too. You know, they build this set meticulously, word for word, over and over again, rinse and repeat until they get it to a place where they feel like the audience is going to react the way that they want them to react. And that's okay. That's, it's essentially.
No, that's, we're talking about different stages, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the early on the reconstruction stage, I will do that. I will be completely freestyle, everything there. And then you'll start building, 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 refinement, refinement, refinement. And then you build out from there. You go from like, for me, I'll do like an 80-seater, 100-seater, and just do like 30 of them, you know, 30 of these shows. Pop-ups, maybe same-day pop-ups. I'm like, oh, I feel like doing something today. Let's put a post to see who shows up and let's have a good time. And, you know, and then that's how I build it. And then you'll build the actual set, and then you'll go to bigger venues. You'll go to comedy clubs. You're working 500-seaters, you know, for a whole week, doing 6-7 shows a week. And then from there, you'll go, okay, now it's ready. Let's go in the theater.
You've got your beat. You know where you're going.
Yeah.
And you still hit it. When you do those big theaters, do you also leave? I mean, I'm just curious if you leave that room for the inspiration, for the improvisation in those big
theaters. Always. Yeah. I don't do like the bucket thing or anything like that. People usually, when they want to come out to the theater, they expect a show. Right. So it's like, you got to give them a show. And that's why it's like I did that for the last, you know, year straight. You know, it's fun. It's incredible. It was really a pretty special experience post season 2 leading up to the special Wild World that's on Netflix. Now, no streaming.
Now's a link in the show notes for the listeners.
Link in bio.
Yep, link in bio. That's right.
It was really extraordinary to go around the world with my family and my kiddo, and like just to have that shared experience with the audience, and how special that was to hit up like 30 countries in a very short period of time, and to do all these theaters was really, really cool. And to be honest with you, it was really draining because of the subject matter, because of what I felt and what was going on and what's still happening. That's why I'm going back to these like small rooms and trying to find myself again, trying to find like some joy in it again, because the stakes feel so high, you know?
They are.
Yeah,
they are. They absolutely are. So
they are. Uh-huh. You are, have not, I believe in your, at least since I've been aware of you, have not shied away from speaking up and speaking out about things you feel very strongly about.
Which is important.
As you should. It's important, right? And, but that raises the stakes in the room. It raises the stakes with you. And I mean, this is a conscious choice you're making from a deep place of empathy and want for the world to understand the perspective that you bring. Is that must be like emotionally taxing. You just said 30 countries, you know, and however many going all around the world, traveling, and then getting up and talking about the subject matter night after night while the world is literally crumbling around you. That must be very tough.
Yes. Yes, Oprah. Thank you so much. You're about to make me cry here right now.
Yes. Gotcha.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Gotcha moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so hard. Help. Oh, my God.
We love you, Mo. We love you.
Big hug. Love you all back.
It's different places react differently.
I'm sure they do. Yeah.
I think it's been pretty universal, to be honest with you. I haven't had any issues. I think everyone feels pretty clear that you shouldn't,
obliterate
an entire civilized population. I think that's totally okay to say out loud.
Yeah.
Which is nuts to say about the world today, that is controversial to say.
It is nuts to say. And I have to think that we as human beings are at a point when we can agree that this kind of absolute, and I'm just going to say it like I see it, tyranny is fucked up. It's just fucked up. And it took 2 years, almost year and a half, almost for the world to rally and say, okay, enough is enough. Something needs to be done. And in that time, so many lives lost.
Yeah.
The complete decimation of a people, of a country that wasn't doing all that well in the first place because of more tyranny. It's just insane to think that anybody would disagree with that. But there's always contrarians, I guess, in the group. I watched.
Yeah, there's devils. There's devils out there.
Yep.
Yeah. There's devils that don't really feel like we should all get along and have everyone has a right to exist and have right to food, water, and shelter. Right. You know, there's people that actually believe that.
Do you have any?
That's scary.
That's scary.
People that actually believe that. And for me, like, you always knew I was make it. I always knew I was like, you asked me this question before. Did you really imagine for yourself? And I do sometimes want to be like, yeah, I never did, but I saw it. No, I did. I did.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that I did. I'm grateful that I felt that in my gut, and I followed my gut, which is a big gut, but it has, you know, and it was right. That's what matters most. But I didn't think it was going to be under these type of circumstances. I certainly didn't think I was going to be meeting a lot of these children. And I didn't feel, you know, I never thought I'd imagine I'd meet these doctors that were there on the ground. So there is an immense responsibility, you know. Mm-hmm. Everyone that I've ever looked up to before in my entire life has spoken up, you know.
Yes.
Especially when it pertains to their people.
When it matters.
Like, some that don't, is like, just, you know, it doesn't matter if there's their people or not. But again, who's their people? It's just human beings on this earth. We come from different walks of life. We come from different backgrounds. So we can learn from each other and respect one another. And once you see other people as a lower, then we're done for. Mm-hmm. We're toast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, hey, there is a absolute human responsibility, not even like me as a Palestinian responsible, no, as a human being to say this is wrong. That's the most basic bare minimum thing you could do. So I would do that for any other people. I would do that for any situation. that I feel like is absolutely wrong, and I know it's wrong, and I'm seeing it with my own eyes, and I've held these kids, like they've come to my shows, I've taken pictures of them, they've given me like this, just, you know, when you're getting squeezed by a kid that's like lost their mom and dad, and they're like missing a limb, you're like, ah, I don't know. You're like, I quit. You know what I mean? Like, this is nothing else matters. Like, of course I have to, you know, amplify this. You know, there's no other way. And, you know, again, this is part of the beauty of stand-up and making television. And I was in a unique situation where I had a TV show where it's a Palestinian family that's living in Houston. And, you know, that you get to tell this type of story. And the stand-up of it all, it's what makes, you know, the art fun,
yeah,
or interesting or challenging, is that you're able to like walk this tightrope while people are shooting lasers at you, and you get to the other side, you're like, whoa, that was
intense.
We did that.
Yeah, we did that. Yeah.
We did that. Yeah. You know,
do you have any optimism? You seem like you might be an optimistic kind of guy. Do you have optimism that things work out between, with this current situation between Palestine and Israel?
Well, it hasn't before. So it's been going on for 80 plus years. So I'm of course, I'm always hopeful. I never lose hope. But, you know, you could tell people's intentions are haven't been right for a very long time. This has not just happened after October 7th. This is super annoying that it just keeps... This is like the thing where people look at where it's, you could say 100 years. It's been over 100 years. I mean, yeah, since World War I, since they were fleeing there as refugees to come to Palestine, and they were taken in, and the colonization. And I don't want to have a history lesson here on the show, but it's been going on for quite some time. And Palestinians have been under, you know, a pretty brutal occupation in the West Bank and living in apartheid. And that's not me saying it. It's every single, you know, respected institution on planet Earth that's saying that. So I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
So I'm just telling you what it is. And that's what episode 8 is. And in season 2 of Mo was really trying to just bring that home and literally bring the family home and for people to see what it's like to actually even travel there as Palestinians. Just to see like my mom, like my own mom who's born there, who's from there, you know, and her sisters and family is there. And, you know, I was telling my wife yesterday, like, I feel such a deep, like, sadness that I can't go take my son to his great grandparents' house, who he's named after, and just have a summer there, you know, and just get to see the family. There's like a sense of like, I've been robbed. And I say this in my special, it's like my mom says this to me, like, I feel like I'm living the same life as my grandmother's. And this is what inspired the time bit. It was like, time is undefeated. Time is fleeting. Time flies. And you can never go back in time.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what inspired everything with the time bit itself at the end of the special.
It's beautiful. You know, my wife is Venezuelan, and we talk about this often.
I can't talk to you anymore. I don't talk to Venezuela. You know, I have so many friends that are... No, I'm just teasing. Okay. Just teasing. Come on.
You have a lot of friends.
Kidding.
I know. You have friends that are married to Venezuelans?
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah. I have a very dear friend. He just 6 months in. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, yeah.
The family.
Yeah. A beautiful people of the Venezuelans also. And they also robbed, in a different way, but everything's different, but kind of the same. And they are also a disparate people all around the world. Yeah. And we talk about this often, that I now have children who the best part of them is Venezuelan. And there is little to no chance, at least not right now, that we could go back and they could go see their grandparents in their native, you know, part where their mom's.
Excuse my ignorance, but why can't she go back?
She could go back, but it would put her and the children in danger, because Venezuela is not necessarily, it's not as dangerous as Palestine, but there is a very oppressive government. And anytime you leave and you come back, say you become a U.S. citizen and you go back, you could, but then you bring American children into the situation. It could be dangerous. And the Maduran government could at any time, for any reason, decide that they don't like you and you end up somewhere disappeared.
Yeah.
Right.
And
this has happened to Americans. Actually, we just got 4 Americans back who spent a long time in Venezuelan prison because they said the wrong thing about the government. And I have not always, and I'm also not a hugely public figure, but I'm a public figure and said some things on the show that I feel strongly about.
Yeah.
I could
not
walk
a good
in.
Idea.
Yeah, no, not a good idea.
Yeah.
It just puts everybody in danger for no reason, right?
I get it. Yeah, I get
but
it.
But at some point, hopefully, you know, in the near future, things change, but you remain hopeful. But you don't get yourself too excited because you never know what's around.
Well, the good news is it seems like the light at the end of the tunnel. I shouldn't say good news, but feels like it's like you can still retain like your lands and ownership of lands, and that can still be there. And then eventually, when it turns around, you can just go home, right?
Yes, eventually. Yes, that's it's different in that situation where, like, you know, in Palestine, is who knows what happens. I mean, turn it into the beach resort. It's like it's crazy.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Yeah, it's happening. Disgusting. They're bulldozing and clearing it out right now. There's no intention. Yeah, I just saw it today, this morning. They're like bulldozing all the rubble and everything. It's clearly, it's very, very clear that the intention was to decimate, move them all out, put them in tents, you know, refugee, kill whoever you can, that's fine. Hospitals, churches, mosques, libraries, it doesn't matter, decimate, eliminate history, you know, and then you can just, you know, rebuild on dead people. That is crazy. It's fucking bananas.
Build Trump Palestine.
It's goddamn bananas.
It is goddamn bananas. And I have friends that are Palestinian, and they have amplified your voice by sharing your reels and talking and all this other stuff. And so I think it's you met the moment, right? And that's amazing that you met the moment. You met the time. And
I just feel like making something that's timely and timeless, you know? And that's like talking about legacy and what you leave behind. It takes us back to what I was saying there. And I think it's really important to do so. And I am looking forward to this next phase as well. And just trying to see what I come up with and write next that can maybe just find some kind of happiness and fun in it again, because it's just been super, super heavy. And I think just like just going to like pure filmmaking and just doing something dope and funny and thoughtful, still subversive, but in a different direction than I did before, for sure. Like I'm just in this phase of like reinventing myself in a way.
It's like I gotta like, put a smile on my face.
Yeah, well, you're a dad now. Yeah, you're a dad. There's a lot of material there.
Right. Yeah,
you would think, but the guy doesn't like me. He doesn't want me. Okay, wants nothing to do with me. He's just still is on his mother's teeth. I mean, that's it. It's like, that's all he wants. What do you have to offer? Do you have milk in your chest? No, get out of here.
You have warmth and comfort. Yeah, I don't care for your funny faces, man.
It's the the eye contact while he's breastfeeding is what's so concerning. Oh, you know, said side eye like
It is so true.
It's like, bro, what are you looking at me like that for?
Hey, dude, you know,
it's very depressing. Yeah, exactly. And you try to get near it, he's like, what? He just smacks me right in the face. And then I like pretend to cry. I've done everything. I'm like, pretend to cry. Like, you can't hit me in the face. Don't hit me in the face. Like, don't do it. It's like all these levels of, hey, don't hit me in the face. And he could care less. You moving on. Get out of here. All right? Hop along, Kasarich.
You will be surprised. One day when he's off the teat, that little kid is going to start looking at you in a different way. And then you guys are going to be buddies forever. Best friends for life.
That's if I let him forget it.
Yeah, you know? Don't let him forget it. You got to remind him when he's 20.
I might be like, no, sorry, buddy.
Yeah, I tried.
You had your chance. You know, I'm not going to sit here and just like be a pushover.
Yeah, you think I'm going to wait forever for you?
What, you want me to raise you now? No, buddy. You got YouTube videos to show you how to be a man.
They do. There's that dad, YouTube dad.
That's it. Awesome. Oh, God, I would be so heartbroken.
Yeah, I know.
If I walk in and my son's like, oh, I'm good. I got a YouTube father now.
It's all happening. In some ways, I'm happy.
I think
YouTube
I would snap the iPad and I would snap that. Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
I would snap. What? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're okay. You're funny. You're right. This is really funny. In some ways, I'm happy the YouTube dad is there because I don't have some of the skills the YouTube dad has. So I'm going to go talk to YouTube dad.
Yeah.
Go find out from YouTube.
Yeah. I'm the kind of crazy, though. Like, while YouTube dad is doing one of these videos, I would just roll up on him mid video. Bro, you think you better than me? You think you got more skill sets than me, buddy pal? I don't know why I would be speaking like Joe Pesci from Goodfellas. Yeah, because it's intimidating. You think you can teach my kid better than me? Forget about it. Come in.
And you can do it. You got the look. You got the look.
Hey, forget about it. What are you doing?
Come here, funny man. Come here,
just
funny.
Funny? Yeah. Huh?
Come here, YouTube dad.
My son loves you more than me. Just go up and just snap on him. I got to look this guy up. I really got to look this guy up. I got to be on the lookout for this.
He's there. He's very popular.
But I shouldn't do it. Then he'll be in the family algorithm.
Yeah, he's going to be in the... That's right. He's going to get served.
No. Can't do it. Don't do it.
You got to go on private and then find him. And then
just go out of town for a week and come back. And my wife is like content with the
YouTube
father and dad. And she got a YouTube husband and a YouTube dad. Like, just... But I'm so sick as an artist, I'll be like, well, I can get another like 10 minutes out of that.
See, you're already thinking. Yeah.
I'm so sick, though. You know, I could write a movie about this. It's sad, but funny. And also,
the YouTube
very in the moment. No, I'm just kidding.
Very now.
Very now.
What? I have a question from way back in the beginning of the conversation. I remember. Look at my brain.
No, wow. You remember.
Where do you, like, when you go on vacation, when your wife says, okay, Mo, we got to slow down. You got to take a vacation. You got to learn. Where do you guys, what's your vibe? Is it like sitting on the beach or?
Oh, I don't, it's like the worst, the beach, you know?
Really?
Yeah. Like who likes to swim in the beach?
I do.
Why are you putting yourself out there like
I'm
this?
I'm a son. Like I'm You're Irish.
You're not capable
I shouldn't
to survive in the beach. Yeah. It's like, stop it. No, I do like the sounds of the beach. I like the combination of like mountain beach situation.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think I prefer that over like cold vacation. I don't want to like, I don't want to go ski. Like what's the
matter?
Like you're up there, you're 9,000 above sea level, you can barely breathe.
Yeah.
You're just expected to go on this little thing and then go down the slopes. Like you're out of your mind, everybody.
You're going to break a leg.
It's the best.
Legs. Yeah.
I think I did the what do you call it? The not a jet ski, but the snowmobile.
Yeah.
I got sick. The next day. I got a huge, like a massive fever. Yeah, because I'm like riding at 60 miles an hour in the mountains with below, it's below zero. I was like so cold and it was Montana. It was like 5 degrees.
Duh.
Even though I was wearing the spacesuit or the snow thing, I still got sick. Everyone's in the hotels got tracking in snow everywhere. It's melting inside the hotel. Everybody's click-clacking with their boots inside. I'm like, this is the worst. I'm sorry. This is like the worst vacation possible. So yes, I will take... I'm a boat guy. I like boats. I'll do a boat on the water. I'll do that. I like lakes, probably like good lakes more than oceans because I just don't trust. I respect the ocean. I got a massive amount of respect for the ocean. It's so powerful. Like, I don't want to mess with you. Like, I don't want to. I'm a great swimmer, but not good enough to beat an ocean. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I could hold my breath like 45 seconds with no rehearsal, like no practice, probably like 35-40, because I'm toast, you know what I mean? Like I'm not doing it. But I'll anchor somewhere and take like a, as long as I could see what's happening under there,
right,
I'm okay. We went to Mexico. I think we went to Cabo.
Yeah, Cabo's beautiful. Yeah,
yeah. Or we went to Puerto Vallarta as well, and we saw all the, it was like whale season, which is my favorite. And we went whale watching. That was so cool. And then he anchored and we're in the water. And I could just feel the vibrations of the whales. There's so many whales. And then one came up probably like 20 feet away from me.
No
amazing.
Way.
While I was in the amazing my ass. Well, I just
scared
like,
the shit out of you.
I was just like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. I was like, get me out of here. I was like, I'm sitting up there. What am I doing? This guy's, these things weigh tons. What am I doing myself? And my wife was, she was like paddleboarding. And she had the surfboard, and she's like, I can't even see her anymore. I'm like, babe, I was like, honey, what the hell are you doing?
She's so far.
She was like, just reel me in. I was like, you're not connected to the boat. There's no rope. And she started freaking out. She's like, oh my God, I'm not connected to the boat. I was like, no, how long do you think this rope is?
This isn't
you're not two skiing. football fields away from me. Like, you think they have rope this long? Come over here. There's whales coming out of the water. So it's a little tense, I think.
I agree.
But I like that. I think I'm good with that. I love to swim. I do enjoy that. So yeah, I joke about the thing. But I like the ones, the ocean that has like the netting, you know, they have it blocked off for you.
Right. Yes, I'm a child. Me too.
Yeah, I want to get in those. It's netted. I'm good to go. If something gets in, it's just very tiny. I can deal with it.
I agree with you.
But there. That's it. Like Australia, I'll never swim in Australia.
Fuck,
I have no desire.
I don't have any. I like Australians, zero. But I have zero desire to spend a lot of time anywhere in Australia because everything can kill you.
That's true.
Yeah.
Even Australians say it. It's not like some trope.
No, they're swimming all the time. Yeah, Bondi Beach. They're just having such a great time in Bondi Beach. And then I saw this documentary about microscopic jellyfish.
Yes.
Oh, it's a microscopic jellyfish. You can only see it through a microscope, and it can kill you. Like instantly. Within minutes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It's like it's microscopic.
It's tiny.
I have no chance.
Yeah.
I have no chance.
I saw this too. It's like the blue fanged jellyfish or something. And it's got it's like the most poisonous substance known to man. And they're not aggressive, but if you happen to, you know, swat at it or something and it attaches to you and like stings you, you're dead.
You're toast.
There's nothing that they can do about it. They can hope that your body survives it, but very few people do. And that's only found in Australia.
Right.
Just like all the other terrible things. I love Australia, by the way. We love Australia, but
I was just in Australia. I don't care. Yeah, say what. Who cares? Yeah, they know.
We'll stick to Outback Steakhouse.
Yeah, they know. That's the thing. We'll stick to Outback Steakhouse. That's right.
Yeah, Foster's, Australian for beer. No, it's not. Nobody drinks Foster's in Australia. They lied to you.
Well, the good news is no one drinks it here either. So I used to drink those oil cans, and then I was like, what am I doing? I look like a fucking moron. Yeah.
Yeah. I look like a fucking moron. Got like a mini keg in your hand? What are you doing? This guy's got a problem. Beer.
Yeah. I look like a child. Mo's new special is available. There are links in the show notes, and then season one, season two are available too of his award-winning Peabody award-winning show. Mo, I thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
my friend.
Thanks for coming on. It's been great.
Thank you for having me. I had a blast.
You are welcome anytime, and we're rooting for you. And we hope to see you again soon. Thanks, Mo.
Thank you so much. Much love, guys.
Appreciate it. Much love to you.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye.
Rachel here. While Brian takes his old man bladder to the little boy's room, let's talk turkey. TCB needs your help. If you love the show, do us all a favor and share. Sharing is caring, and we know you care, don't you? Well, don't you? Ooh, that was some childhood trauma. Rearing its ugly head. Do you want to be on the show? Leave us a voicemail at 212-433-3822, and you could be the next TCB disembodied voice. Ooh, what'd you do today? I was a disembodied voice. You know, that sounds more dangerous than it actually is. Find us on Insta at The Commercial Break, on the web at tcbpodcast.com, and all the episodes on video are available the same day at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. I'm going to go help Brian get back up the stairs while you listen to the sponsors, and then we'll all meet back here and get back to this episode of The Commercial Break. I'll take a raise now, bitches. Bye.
Mr. Mo Amir, Peabody Award-winning Mo Amir. I keep saying it as if it's a credit to The Commercial Break that he won a Peabody Award. Gotham Awards, Independent Spirit Award. I think he was nominated for a couple of Emmys. A guy's got quite the resume, I do have to say, and I really enjoyed our conversation with him. It's fun to talk to all the comedians, and a lot of times it's shits and giggles, but at times it's fun to go deeper, and Mo was the perfect candidate for that. You know, I do. I do like to read Ram Dass, in case you didn't hear. All right, Mo Amir, bunch of stuff in the show notes. You can go check it out. Thanks again to him and to his agent for setting that up. Great. Fantastic. All right. Here's how the rest of the week is going to roll out. You're going to check us out again on Friday. We'll have a TCB Classic. And then for Christmas week, we'll have another TCB infomercial on Wednesday, another TCB Classic. And then we return live to the studio right before the new year. And then after the new year, we'll be on our regular schedule Tuesday and Thursday. Recording episodes live in the studio. You can join us on youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or you can check us out on Twitch. You can get involved in the conversation. You can even join live via video. We will start taking some folks into the room with us and having some fun. So it's a little fresh coat of paint for season number 7. Do us a favor, follow us at The Commercial Break on Instagram, so that you can get notified about all the comings and goings of The Commercial Break. You can follow me, Brian W. Green, on Instagram. And then you can follow TCB Chrissy on Instagram also for all of our individual shit. What else? Oh, you can also, if you want to get a hold of us, if you want us to respond really quickly, DM us on Instagram. And I'll explain why. We have the phone, the studio phone, but it gets a little clunky and a little hard to respond to everybody on text message. So if you've been texting us, continue to text us. Otherwise, hit us up on Instagram, tcbpodcast.com for your free sticker. We look forward to season number 7. Happy holidays. If I don't talk to you before then, Merry fucking Christmas. Until next. Oh, I do love you. Best to you. And until next time, I will say, I do say, and I must say, good fucking bye.